I know a lot of them have things like Lou Gehrig's disease and Guillain-Barré and so forth, and they act as if there's absolutely no connection between the vaccinations and these symptoms, but it seems highly correlated from what I can understand.
Well, I spent a lot of time on this in the seminar. There's such a common thread in the neurological type of vaccine injuries is the inability of the myelin to form, or once the myelin is formed, the myelin degenerates. The myelin is like the insulation that's supposed to be around all the neurons of our brain. And it's just like if the insulation that was in all the wires inside your computer suddenly developed a whole bunch of nicks and gaps in it. Just think of how would your computer operate if that happened? Well, this is a very, very similar mechanism, a good analogy that you can use for the neurological damage in all these different types of disease: Guillain-Barré, multiple sclerosis, the demyelinating diseases, autism, learning disorders, things like how can Michael J. Fox get Parkinson's at 28 years old? Things like this. It's a good hypothesis to see how these things could be the result of delayed latent vaccine injuries.
I saw something a while back relating Parkinson's to Roundup.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of interesting. Do you know, as you're speaking about this, is there any way that you're aware of regenerating the myelin sheath? I know I can, as we talk about it, just occurs to me, as you know, the essential fatty acids would be real prominent and so forth. But do you know?
I mean, there's dozens of things that could claim to be benefiting someone, but it's just like with the whole study of autism, you know, and this now new industry of how we're going to cure autism, and we have all these companies out there claiming that they're curing autism. My opinion is this is the wrong question. The question is, how can we stop it from happening? What is causing it? Why is, for example, autism, why is it this incredible epidemic that has risen up within the last 15 years, and it is still on the geometric increase? What can we do to stop that from happening? That's the real question that we have to be asking.
And it seems that as more children are becoming injured, there are more questions starting to arise. Apparently there's a lot of parental vaccination information groups that are starting to form.
Yes.
You mentioned 909shot.com.
That's an old one. That's NVIC. There's the Autism Autoimmunity Project in Florida. That's a big one. They have a website. You can get to them through my website, thedoctorwithin.com.
Great.
And there's Ed Yazbek, and there's Bernard Rimlin. There are several associations out there.
Well, that's terrific. So people go to thedoctorwithin.com. There's your link to many other websites. And as I say, you can spend more than one evening at that particular website. We're getting towards the end of our program, Dr. O'Shea. Maybe you could just kind of give the when and where one more time for folks.
Okay. This seminar that I'm going to do in San Jose is going to be at the Park Plaza Hotel. I think it's 1355 North 4th Street, this coming Saturday, March 8th. It will start at 8 a.m. sharp. It'll be over around 4:30, and you can register it for it by going to the website at www.thedoctorwithin.com, and doctor's all spelled out.
And for folks, what would be a phone number?
408-298-1800.
One more time.
408-298-1800.
Well, great. I really appreciate your being on the airwaves here. And folks, I highly recommend both the book, The Sanctity of Human Blood, and also the seminar. So please go see Dr. O'Shea. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tom. Always a pleasure.
children were in 70s.
Oh, it was great, yeah. I just interviewed Tina Shea again on vaccination. Did it again here tonight. Pretty well. Well, are we going to war?
Very soon.
Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills over here, looking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests. And for those of you out there across America, we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we'll be getting to our special guest this evening in just a moment. But at this point, I just wanted to mention this whole idea of reality and, of course, the illusion. Now, everybody knows that America went to war against Afghanistan because Osama bin Laden was responsible for the 9/11 attack. I mean, you remember that? That's why we went to war, and the United States had proof. He planned the attack. He was responsible for the attack, and that's why we attacked Afghanistan. And the people in Afghanistan, the Taliban, said, look, just show us the proof. And we said, we don't have to show you the proof. We have the secret proof. We know it's true, but, of course, we're not going to show it to you because we don't want Osama bin Laden to know how we knew he was behind this. And then they said, well, look, we'll send Osama bin Laden to another country, and you can try him there. He can be tried for the crimes. Oh, no, no, no. You've got to turn him over, and all the leaders of the al-Qaeda that came out of the camps that we financed during the Afghan war, you've got to give us all the al-Qaeda leaders and Osama bin Laden. And they said, look, we'll just force him to leave the country, and you can probably pick him up when he leaves. No, we're going to war. And so we went to war, and I don't know how many people died. We didn't lose very many, but certainly the Afghan people, enough civilians were killed, Taliban were killed. And remember, of course, we had financed the Taliban movement, and, of course, we had trained many of these unfortunate young people in schools that were financed and supplied by the USAID. And any of you doubt that, we have the filing of the article out of the Washington Post on that, and we spent $56 million on textbooks pushing the radical Islamic faith, you know, how wonderful it was to die for Allah, this radical form of Islam, you got to kill the infidels. And we were using those textbooks all during the Afghan war. We're still using them as of a year ago, training the youth there in this radical form of Islam with our tax dollars. But of course, a lot of those people we trained then, of course, were in the Taliban. They were recruited into it because they believed what they learned in the schools we financed, and they died. And now we find out, oh, shucks, it really wasn't Osama bin Laden at all. It was this fellow Khalid Muhammad, but he knew he was a lieutenant of bin Laden, but we got him. He was the major planner of this whole attack. Well, wait a minute now. I thought it was bin Laden. No, it was Khalid Muhammad, who we just got, and boy, this is a great thing, and that shows that we're really fighting a good war against terrorism here. In fact, we're winning the war on terrorism. That's why we're going to war with Iraq. And ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to suggest that nothing is as it appears to be. And that's the real problem we have today. When you have an imperial executive department, whether it's headed by the Democrats or Republicans, we have a situation that leads to the eventual loss of freedom. And it was Charles Lindbergh who said, when American boys go overseas to fight for freedom, we find that we lose ever more freedom here at home. And now, of course, we're going to war with Iraq. And, of course, there's no declaration of war. When Congressman Ron Paul, during a meeting, a committee meeting in Washington, D.C., suggested, even though he doesn't favor the war, that Congress declare a war, make a declaration of war, Congressman Hyde, who is the darling of the conservative Christians in this country, rose and said, why, that's the most ridiculous thing. The Constitution is outmoded. We don't abide by the Constitution anymore. It's an outdated document. And when Congressman Tom Lantos, the Democrat leader, agreed, and when Congressman Paul went to get that material from C-SPAN, which was taking videos, and from the Congressional Recording Office, which records everything, why, that information just disappeared, that congressmen would say that we don't go by the Constitution anymore, that just that one segment, not just one, but C-SPAN and the Congressional Recording Office just didn't have that information available any longer. It just mysteriously disappeared. Congressman Ron Paul tells that story. And that's really what happens in America. These things go down the memory hole, and they never took place because, after all, they weren't recorded. And if they'd taken place, they would have been recorded, wouldn't they? Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're in trouble because people have forgotten the Constitution, and that's what we're going to be talking with Monty Bellum about tonight. The American people need to understand the Constitution. Our children in school need to understand the Constitution, which was the basis of the freedom under God that we had here in this country. Monty, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Why don't you give our listeners the background of course, your effort to try to get the state there of Washington to require that this declaration of the Constitution be taught, what you're trying to accomplish and what our listeners could do to help you?
Well, I'm trying to accomplish getting our schools to teach the relationship of the Declaration of Independence to the Constitutions of the United States and the state of Washington, and to display these documents on school property. I virtually discovered that hardly anyone knows anything about the Declaration of Independence, and we know even less about our state constitutions.
And doesn't your state constitution in the opening paragraph or somewhere talk about its relationship to God?
Yes, most of the state constitutions have very powerful statements. Your state of California says, we the people of the state of California, grateful to Almighty God for our liberty.
Oh my goodness.
Don't ordain this Constitution.
Don't let the Supreme Court know that. They'll do away with the Constitution. But yeah, they'll have to do away with the Constitution of every one of our states, because every one of them was founded on this concept of God.
Yeah, you know, that's right. And they're taken from the Declaration of Independence, this powerful statement in the Declaration of Independence that says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed, that means freely given, certain unalienable, that means you can't take them away, rights which are among life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the very next sentence then gives the purpose of government. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men with consent of the governed.
With the consent of the governed, but unfortunately less and less things are done with the consent of the governed. It's always really whatever politicians you can buy and sell, then you get them to do your bidding, and they really aren't answerable to the people, except, of course, the next November, and everybody's forgotten by then, because they've even passed a law saying it's illegal for anybody, any organization, to talk about the voting record of the congressman immediately, I think for 60 days before the election, something of the sort.
Well, most states pattern their constitutions after the Declaration of Independence, you know, where they make they make a statement being grateful for our liberties, do ordain this Constitution, and then they make a statement like, in the state of Washington, all political power is inherent in the people, and governments derive their just power from the consent of the governed to protect and maintain individual rights. So our state constitution regurgitates the thought that our rights are free gifts from God, and the purpose of the government is to protect those rights. We as Americans are held together by an idea. Other countries are held together by dictators, by ethnic groups, by long-standing traditions. In America, we're a melting pot, and we are held together by this unique idea expressed in the Declaration of Independence, that our rights are free gifts from God, and that the purpose of government is to protect those rights. That thought revolutionized the world, and we've lost sight of it. I've discovered that, for example, lawyers and judges can go all the way through law school and never be exposed to their state constitutions. They get the same type of education as everyone else does in middle school, and nothing after that.
And, of course, even in law school, why, they never read the Constitution. They simply read what judges have said about the Constitution, judges who didn't believe in the Constitution and certainly didn't believe in our God-given rights.
And then we have this situation that exists in Washington and in every other state of the nation, that people who get elected to office must swear an oath to uphold their state constitution, a document they have never seen and have never read. And so what's happening? We're having elected officials and judges who swear an oath, who don't know what's said. They've become laws unto themselves, and they are usurping the liberty from us as a people. And the only way to correct that, in my view, is to get the truth taught in our schools.
All right, so what is your plan now? You are going to have it required that the Declaration and the Constitution and the relationship to freedom be taught in our schools?
Yes, well, what I did, and other states have similar laws to the state of Washington, I found a statute in the state of Washington that says, the study of the U.S. and Washington state constitution shall be prerequisite to graduating from any high school in the state. Sounds wonderful. I asked the superintendent of public instruction, how is this being implemented? And I got a Bill Clinton answer. Oh, I see. You want to know what the definition of the word study is. If you listen very carefully, I said the study of. Well, the courts have gone in and muddied this up. They've said any study constitutes study, so they leave it to the teacher to do the right thing. And the teachers have never been exposed to these simple concepts. We've got kids in middle school right now that don't understand why we celebrate the 4th of July. And so basically what I did is I took that statute and said, okay, I'll define the word study to include studying the relationship of the Declaration of Independence to the constitutions of the United States and the state of Washington, and to display these documents on school property. We've done polls on this. It has 88% voter approval for this. It's something the people really want. But will the legislature give it to the people? We're going to find out tomorrow night.
All right, fine. Now, what's going to happen tomorrow?
Tomorrow night at 6 p.m. in Olympia, they're going to have a hearing before the Education Committee. And that Education Committee will take a vote right after this hearing to determine whether this bill will go any farther or not.
In other words, they can kill it right there if they want to.
They can kill it right there.
They can, of course, allow it to go forward. If it does go, if it is killed, then can you, of course, go for an initiative?
Yes. If it is killed, I will be leading another initiative drive in the state.
Now, for our listeners out there, go ahead.
I've done five of them. You know, so I've been there, done that. Know what it takes to get 280,000 signatures.
All right, now, you've done this before. Why don't you tell our listeners who don't know who you are and what you've done in the past, what were the other initiatives you were actually able to get through the legislature?
Okay, well, there's several of them. One of them, we got what was known as I-695, the $30 car tab initiative through. That got 530,000 signatures. The Supreme Court threw it out. But the legislature was so fearful of the people, within 10 days, they passed a law that did away with the motor vehicle excise tax. We followed that up with another initiative in I-722 that would limit property taxes, but the Supreme Court found a reason to throw that one out also.
Well, you know, you've got a real problem with your Supreme Court there. I was reading
in
the paper where one of your Supreme Court justices, of course, was drunk. She ran her car into another car and then sped away. In other words, first of all, she was drunk. Then, of course, she hit a car, and then she left the scene of the accident without making any effort. And she said afterwards, after she'd sobered up, well, my activity was inexcusable. Has she been removed from the court?
No, I mean, she'd have to be impeached by the Senate to do that.
And this is the sort of people you've got there. And yeah. I've read this article just today. In fact, has that been gotten any publicity there in the state?
Very little.
Right. You're aware of what I'm talking about, though.
Yes, I am aware, but it's very...
When we get people like that on your courts, ladies and gentlemen, who violate the law, and, of course, the honorable thing to do under those circumstances would be to step down, because you could never trust the judgment of this person again. I mean, it's sort of like being a minister. You're held to a higher standard, or a doctor. I mean, a doctor who commits a crime should lose his license. Certainly a minister who's guilty of infidelity or cheating or lying should never be behind the pulpit, behind a pulpit again. And a judge who violates the law and knowingly does it, and then says what I did was inexcusable, but I'm going to continue sitting on the bench. And there's no outcry in the media because the media is going right along concealing everything. This is why we're in trouble today. And where is the outcry from the churches? I want to know, because the churches should be the conscience of our society, and they're not today. The pulpits are quiet because many of our ministers have far more fear of government than they do of God.
Well, one of the things with the Supreme Court activity on our initiatives that helped me formulate this bill to require the teaching of the relationship of the Declaration of Independence to the Constitution, because it forced me to go into the Constitution and start reading. And while I was reading the Constitution, I always started with Article 1. And I looked and I said, well, what is this before Article 1? It's the preamble. I wonder what it says. And I read it. We, the people of the state of Washington, grateful to the supreme ruler of the universe for our liberties, do ordain this Constitution. Got a warm feeling, thought, boy, that's wonderful, and let it go. It took me coming back, referencing the Constitution several times, and reading that statement before I got the idea, I wonder if anybody else knows what this says. I started asking around, and I could find no one. So then I wondered, I wonder what the other state constitutions say, and looked them all up and found them substantially similar, even stronger statements, and that no one, literally no one, knows what our state constitutions say.
Because, of course, that is the foundation of America, was that belief in God. As de Tocqueville had said when he came to America in 1840, and he wrote that wonderful on democracy when he went back to France, and he said, America is great because America is good, and if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great. And he talked about how our pulpits flamed with righteousness. That was the source of America's greatness. But, of course, do our pulpits really flame with much of anything today other than let's feel good? And so how are we going to, get the people? Of course, do you have a means of reaching the people and getting the information to them?
Yes. Well, I've been involved with this, with initiatives for 4 years now. We've done, five successful ones. I'm separated from the rest of my group. They did not want to pursue this this area. So I've formed my own group, but I have all of the information. The only thing I don't have is money, but that's raisable.
All right, fine. Well, why don't we get your name, your address, and your how people can contact you, because this is so vitally important. It's one thing saving money and, doing away with the tax and here, there, and elsewhere. But, of course, money really means nothing when you've lost your freedom, and our freedom rests upon this concept of freedom under God.
Well, I appreciate that. There's two ways that people can contact me. If you're on the Internet, the simplest way, if they can remember, printingpress.com. That's printingpress.com. That's our website. From that website, you can pick up a lot of information. But for those people who are not on the Internet and would like to send a donation to help, it would be Friends of the Constitution, 5312 West Toucannon. That's T-U-C-A-N-N-O-N.
Wait a minute. West, what is it?
West Toucannon, T-U-C-A-N-N-O-N. And the zip code is 99336. That's Kennewick, Washington, but the zip is 99336.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Monty Bellum, and we'll get more of this information. We'll welcome your calls from out there across the United States, but, of course, since we're being heard up there in Washington this evening, we'll welcome your calls from the state of Washington, because, of course, if the good people won't get involved in something like this, when will they be involved? When it's too late, when freedom, as we've known it, is simply a remembrance of things past. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Monty Bellum, and we look forward to hearing from you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest this evening, Monty Bellum, and we're talking about his efforts to really get the state legislature to actually act tomorrow evening. This will be, Tuesday evening, and, of course, to at least allow this out of a committee under the floor of the state legislature. Now, is this the Senate or the Assembly or the House?
No, this is the House.
All right, fine. Now, is there anything that our listeners could do tonight to perhaps encourage some of those legislatures to realize that the people, 88% of them, support this concept of teaching people about your state constitution, about our Declaration of Independence, and about the federal constitution?
Well, if they're from the state of Washington, tomorrow they could call the 1-800 number and ask that Governor Locke and their state legislators support the Constitution.
All right. What's the 800 number?
That number is 800-562-6000.
That's 562-6000. And when they get that number, what happens? Will they have a direct line to...
They will talk to an actual person, and they'll relay the message to Governor Locke and to their legislators.
All right, fine. And will they do it in email form, or how will they do it?
Well, no. They will do it via the telephone. I don't know exactly how they do it, but they do it.
All right. Now, is that a state official?
That's a state hotline. They'll talk to an official from the state that will take their calls.
All right. And of course, a lot of times these things are done just to give you that, so you can vent your frustration. But remember that if they don't go for it, then, of course, fortunately, you have the initiative process. And the last thing they really want, I think, especially at this time, as all of our states are moving into real crisis times, is to feel that the people of their state are not behind them. Here in California, as you know, we have a recall, a movement for our governor. And, of course, it's because everybody's mad at him. The people on the right are mad at him. The people on the left are mad at him. The Christians are mad at him. The people who hate the Christians are mad at the governor, too. There's a lot of people who, and certainly this can follow through to any legislators. When things are bad, you're looking for a scapegoat. And, of course, maybe you go to the people who hold the power, who created the problems, and those are the people in the legislature. So do you think they may be more receptive at this time?
I hope so. After the Supreme Court made their decision that the Ninth Circuit Court that said you can't say under God anymore, I've had several legislators that have emailed me. One of them emailed me and told me she was a member of the committee, that she was going to force an executive vote on this issue tomorrow night.
Okay, wonderful.
We can look at to see whether a cup's half full or half empty. I'm very thankful that my local legislator was able to sponsor this bill, was agreeable to sponsor it, and he got 18 other co-sponsors.
Now, of course, I'm sure you probably have some very good people in your legislature up there. The question is, do you have enough?
Well, that's what we're going to find out.
All right, fine.
That's what we're going to find out, because this is the second year that they have been given this idea.
All right, fine.
And without that, then it will be a grueling task to get the signatures, but we can lead the nation in this. What I've done here in the state of Washington, the way I've set this up, it's extremely simple, extremely easy to understand. If they go to the to printingpress.com. They'll be able to see a copy of the bill and some other things. There are laws in other states that are similar to this. All they would have to do is find that existing statute and modify it. And many states have the initiative process. It is possible to do.
All right, fine. And of course, the thing is that most people right now, are beginning to feel a little bit more in the way of patriotism there. They're beginning to realize something's seriously wrong with our country, and especially when we find that there are people within, say, the Ninth District Court here in California who hate God. And there are people within the federal judiciary who hate God. And
They're making laws, and they're not supposed to make. If our people understood what our Constitution says about judges, there would be an outcry for them to be impeached because they serve during terms of good behavior.
Right.
And if they become an enemy to our Constitution, they need to be removed.
Right.
And either they are blatantly ignorant, or they are an enemy.
Right. Well, I think the important thing is that the people are concerned, and freedom is lost in a country such as ours when the good people are not involved. And here's a chance to be involved. So that number again, 800-562-6000. That's 800-562-6000. And if you call that tomorrow, that information will be relayed to your representatives. Let them know how you feel if you're out there across the state of Washington listening to us. Because, of course, once they know how you feel, they may want to totally ignore it. On the other hand, somebody once said, most legislators really aren't dedicated so much to the right or to the left. They're just dedicated in staying in office. They like being in office. There are perks, lots of advantage, prestige, a little money that they can make that they shouldn't. But some of them are really incredibly honest, too. Unfortunately, I think they're in a minority. But the one thing is, the thing I think they fear more than anything is that the people will remember in November how they voted. And I assure Marty that you will hold their feet to the fire.
Well, I certainly hope to, but it's not me. I mean, it's gratifying to see the thousands of people that have rallied behind the ideas that I've promoted, and it's humbling. I don't do this for recognition to me. I am a volunteer. I have worked. This will be the fifth year that I have devoted my retirement to this. I receive no money at all.
Well,
I expect my expenses to be paid, but it's a total volunteer effort.
Well, God bless you for doing what you're doing, because this is what it takes. It takes somebody who has the time and is willing to give up and forego all the wonderful things that we could be doing, the traveling or golf or fishing or all these wonderful things, to dedicate themselves to public service. And this is, in some ways, maybe even more important than being in the legislature, try to get the people to understand.
My volunteer efforts that have been especially multiplied by others who have decided to follow my lead has affected everyone in the state. Because we not only got rid of the $30 car tabs, we got our property tax under control. I told you they threw out the first initiative. We went back on with a second initiative that limited the amount of money that they could take from existing property to 1% a year. And we did that in a way that the courts can't touch it.
No, that's like Proposition 13. That's a great...
It's more stringent than Prop 13 over the long run.
Well, I'm glad it is, because I'll tell you what, government's like a hungry lion. It just never has enough, and they will spend and spend, and besides that, the more money they spend, the more better people that they can get dependent upon them, the more that likely they can stay in power. So limiting the access of government to tax, the ability to tax, really is one means of preserving our freedom, as well as saving the people who earn the money, let them spend it rather than the bureaucrats. When did you actually get that legislation through?
In the year 2001. It passed in 2000. It was called Initiative 747.
Well, Marty, I think it's very interesting that a lot of the people who were with you on the issue of taxation and money aren't with you on this subject, and yet I think that this, in many respects, is far more important than the issue of money.
Yeah, well, it definitely is. There was two of us, a fellow by the name of Tim Iman and myself, put together these ideas. I recruited a couple of other people Jack and Mike Fagan from Spokane, who stayed with Tim. I've had to go out on my own and form a new group. I have a Seattle attorney and a Pasco City councilman that form the nucleus of our leadership on this. And it is far more important. We're finding in the state of Washington that one of the things they want to do is try to make the initiative so difficult that it essentially guts it. We have an attempt by our Senate to pass a constitutional change that would allow the governor to essentially veto any initiative from the people.
So much for democracy. They talk about democracy. They really don't believe in it. Of course, we're really republics. Every state is a republic. But, of course, they say we're a democracy. And then, of course, you can see what it really is. It's really about a ruling elite that will control the future of our society and our children. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Monte Bellum. We'll welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and if you're out there in the listening audience, of course, we'll look forward to hearing from you at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. So let us know what you think. Do you think this is a good idea? Do you think it's a bad idea? Are you willing to get in and actually contribute and help? Because, of course, anything like this is expensive. The telephone number to call is 1-800-562-6000. That's 1-800-562-6000 to call. And then, of course, if you'd like to help financially, it's Friends of the what?
Friends of the Constitution.
Friends of the Constitution at 5312 West, and I'm going to let you spell the name of that street.
Tucannon, T-U-C-A-N-N-O-N.
At what city?
Kennewick, K-E-N-N-E-W-I-C-K. 99336. If you get the zip code right, you don't need to worry about spelling the name right.
All right, Friends of the Constitution.
And www.printingpress.com.
Okay, fine. So if you have access to the Internet, and hopefully many of you out there across the state of Washington are listening to this program tonight at Radio Liberty, you can go to www.printingpress.com. Do you have quite a few people on your email list?
I have about 2,000, and I have a mailing list that is about 24,000.
All right.
So, you know, basically, and I know who has contributed in the past. It's a matter of getting the seed money to be able to contact the people to get the flow of money to come in at the rate that is needed.
And
I said I've done this before. I'll have to raise at least $50,000. $300,000 if I have to take this to an initiative.
Well, let's hope that the state legislature will feel, maybe there'll be people there, enough of them, who really do understand the importance of people studying and realizing the foundations of our freedom.
I certainly hope so. This wake-up, we have two or three wake-up calls here in the state of Washington. One was the Ninth Circuit saying you can't say under God in the pledge. Another wake-up call is our Governor Locke, wants to eliminate any questions on our state standardized testings on government, civics, or history, or founding fathers. They're saying that they're having such a hard enough time just getting the kids to read and write that they want to focus all of their testing just on those skills. And it's a disaster. If our kids are not taught the founding principles of this government, we will lose our freedom.
Well, if they don't know how to teach them how to read and write, then they better just close down your schools up there.
Well, they keep saying, give us more money, give us more money. It's the family. Well, you got to break that loop somehow, and the school is the place to do it. The concepts in the Declaration of Independence revolutionized the world. If we can get our schools to start talking about God again, and that the basis of the American dream is that our rights are free gifts from that God, and the purpose of the government is to protect those rights, who knows what will happen. Now, there are some that say, you can't do that. That's religion. It is not religion. We want our schools to teach the substance and meaning of our founding documents. There is no devotion in explaining to kids the basis of our government, that our rights are free gifts from that God, and that the purpose of government is to protect those rights. these, every citizen in this state has the right to figure out how or if they want to pay devotion to the Supreme Being or not. And the government cannot in any way dictate the method of devotion. So it's up to our schools to teach our children the truth and then let them use their agency, their knowledge, to make the choice of what they want to do. But they can't make that choice if they're not taught it.
Now, of course, the amazing thing is that this is not being taught. In fact, there are people who do not want the American people to know the truth, and that is that our freedoms came from God. That was, of course, what made America unique in all nations throughout all history, throughout all time. And what is really so amazing is the fact that because of the degree of control that exists over the media and our educational systems, and certainly over so many people in government, most people do not understand the foundation of our freedom.
What I do, there are a lot of teachers that saying, we're teaching government already. Why do we need another mandate? And here's how I answer them. You are teaching the mechanics of government, the three branches of government, the separation of powers, but you're not teaching the foundation of government. You're not teaching where these rights come from. We talk about human rights in our schools and that everybody should have them. You talk about that, but you don't talk about where those rights come from, nor do you talk about what the purpose of government is.
All you need
the
to
purpose of government is, you know, these are the founding principles. The purpose of government is to protect those rights that are free gifts from God.
Those God-given rights, and that was what our founding fathers, whether they were Christians or whether they were deists, and most of them are Christians, with very, very few exceptions. Of course,
there were no deists.
Well, certainly Benjamin Franklin was a deist.
He was a deist for about 2 years in his younger years. Benjamin Franklin made his passionate plea for prayer before the Constitutional Convention, in which he said, "Sir, the longer I live, the more convincing evidence I see that God governs in the affairs of men." A deist would not pray to God. Franklin did. We have our schools and our universities have so distorted the character of our founding fathers that it is, you know, it's a crime. One of the things, Dr. Stan, that this book that I got, The Making of America, The Meaning and Substance of the Constitution, that started me out, I've read stacks of books after that. A person called me on the phone and told me that he was inspired to buy me a book. And I'd wondered, what kind of book? And when he told me what it was, I had seen the play 1776, and it did not portray our founding fathers in a very positive light. I wanted to know more about them, but I didn't know where to look. And so when this guy gave me the book, and I opened it up to like page 156 and read Benjamin Franklin's passionate plea for prayer. Now, I had been taught that Franklin was a deist. And here was a statement from a man that was obviously not a deist. So I got a book called The Real Benjamin Franklin and read it, and The Real George Washington, and The Real Thomas Jefferson, to find out about the character of these people. And our schools and our universities and our university professors have defamed these people terribly.
No, there's no question that they
have. So, you know, I have done enough research, Dr. Stan. None of them were deists. None of them were atheists. Thomas Jefferson claims to be a Christian, a sect of one, but yet a Christian. He rewrote the four Gospels in four different languages, or rearranged them. He had some particular beliefs that some Christians would say he wasn't a Christian, but he said that he was a true follower of the teachings of Jesus Christ, that those teachings were the most profound of any philosopher of all history, and that made him a Christian.
Well, certainly that is absolutely right. I sent heaven right next to me the Master of Thoughts of Thomas Jefferson, where, of course, he said, "I am a Christian, the only way that a Christ would want anybody to be a Christian." And so what they have done, the thing is that there were many, many stages of Thomas Jefferson's life. But in his younger years, when he wrote the Declaration of Independence, of Independence, Declaration of Independence, he was writing from a Christian perspective because he used the writings of Christians as the basis of that, whether it
be right.
John Locke or Rutherford or Blackstone. All of these various phrases that he used really came out of Christian philosophers, and they reflected the Christian worldview of everybody at that time. Everybody had a Christian worldview at that time. Tragically, they don't today because we've dumbed down our people. That's the tragedy.
Well, they were so distraught with the organized religion at that time and the state-sponsored religion that where they had to pay taxes to have somebody preach to them something they didn't believe. You know, that provided the basis for our right of free speech. Is to give the individual that right, that freedom to make his own choice on how he pays devotion to God. But they made it very clear that our rights are free gifts from this Creator, and that the purpose of the government is to protect our rights.
Well, of course, there are people out there who hate the concept of God, or at least the God of the Bible, and so they're the ones, of course, have altered our teaching, will do everything they can to block the truth from being brought out, even to do away with the Ten Commandments, which is the basis of our law. And if we do away with the Ten Commandments, then who's to say it's wrong to murder? Who's to say it's wrong to steal?
Well, that's why it's so critical. If we can get our students, our children, to read the writings of our founding fathers, they will find out which God that it is.
Well,
they will find out that it was Jesus Christ who was the God of their
the founding fathers, right?
Yeah, of our founding fathers.
Well, of course. First of all, they got to be able to read, and it sounds like they're doing a pretty poor job of teaching them how to read up there.
However, the way that the Constitution is written, that God could be Buddha, it could be Allah, it could be any supreme being.
Well, not the way the Constitution is written because it's dated in the day of our Lord and the
yeah,
day of
well,
our
you're
Lord.
Right.
The
we
day
number,
of our Lord
we number
is
our days from the birth of Jesus
right.
Christ.
And there are many, many things there if you study the Constitution to realize, of course, they were talking about Christianity, and there was no question. I mean, it was like something was self-evident, so they didn't have to say a word Christian nation. Everybody
well,
knew it.
Yeah, well, in the preamble to the U.S. Constitution, too, you know, there are people who will say that God is not mentioned in the U.S. Constitution. Well, he is mentioned in Article 7, where you'd indicated, but he's also indicated in the preamble that all of these things, the Constitution was done to secure the blessings of liberty to themselves and their posterity. And from that, they ordained this Constitution. So where do blessings come from? In the preamble, it's indicated that to secure those blessings, and each generation has got to accept that challenge to secure the blessings for themselves and their posterity or those that follow after them. If each generation doesn't accept that challenge, we lose our freedoms.
Well,
and, of course, what does ordain mean? That means to set aside in a priestly manner.
Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Maybe you disagree. Maybe you think that you can have freedom without God. Our guest today is Monty Benham. That's Monty Benham, and we'd look forward to hearing from you. If you agree, if you disagree, we'd like to know if you're going to be putting that call in tomorrow to 1-800-562-6000. Do you think that things are going to get done without your involvement? If not you, who? If not now, when? Is freedom worthwhile? Investing a free telephone call to let your elected representatives know how you feel? I think it is, and I hope that many of you out there will be putting those calls in. I hope many of you out there will be, of course, writing to the Friends of the Constitution at 5312 West. And you're going to have to put
Duquesne,
that right in.
Tucannon.
Right, and that's Kennewick.
Kennewick.
Washington, 99336. Well, you know, I think it's fascinating that you really, I wish we had somebody here in California who was as dedicated as you are and who knew how to get things done. Of course, you have a little smaller state than we do. How many people in the state of Washington?
We have nearly 6 million.
All right. Well, we've got...
And about 450,000 of them, they have arrests for the warrants of these people. That's an alarming figure. 450,000 they would like to arrest if they had a big enough police force.
Well, now, is that, of course, for what, parking violations or what?
That is for any violation.
These are
they have warrants for the arrest of 450,000 in the small county that I live in, Benton County. They have warrants for the arrest of 5,500. Close to Thanksgiving, they published the top 250 in our paper.
Now, of course, are these serious offenses, or are these sort of troublesome?
They're just
offenses?
Any kind. I mean, if you look in the paper, you will see that when someone gets taken to court and they're given a jail sentence like a year, 364 days of that, you know, is usually suspended, or 360 days. We don't have the jails large enough, or in order to handle everybody, and we don't have the court system to be able to process this, let alone the cops, to go out and arrest them. So what is the solution? We need to teach better citizenship to our citizens, so they'll want to obey the law.
Well, of course, the thing is that you can't be free unless you have a moral people. And it was John Adams who said our society was made for a moral and religious people who would not work for any others. In other words, if you're going to be free, you had to have moral people. Otherwise, you would have to have an authoritarian society. And it was, of course, William Penn who said those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants. And, of course, unfortunately, we are not ruled by God today, and I seriously fear that the day may come very soon when we will be ruled by tyrants. In fact, after hearing...
I hope that's not true, Doctor. I mean, we did a poll on the ballot. If this goes to an initiative, there's 88% of the people that would like. There are a lot of good people...
Of course there are.
...that want to do something. It's that we're being held back by those who have been elected and those who sit... In positions of as judges to keep us down, and we have to use whatever means peacefully. I emphasize peacefully. The pen is mightier than the sword. We can change this with patience and with hard work.
I agree with you, and I think that of course is our job, is to get people to get involved and of course to realize that freedom is never free. It has to be purchased in every generation. And if you're not willing to pay your dues now, then your children will live as slaves. And, of course, they will thank you. They will not thank you for the fact that you were too busy or too indifferent to be involved. And, of course, this happens in every society. Every society's fall because of apathy and indifference. And, of course, it's so easy today in this hedonistic society, increasingly hedonistic society. People know it's wrong. The only reason that it is allowed today is because they have stripped from the local community the ability to maintain a moral society. At one time, we could maintain local pornography laws and maintain everything was to be done at the state and local level. The federal government was not to be involved in any way in regulation of pornography or speech or religion or anything else. But all of these other things were to be managed at the state and the local level, and anybody who reads the 45th of the Federalist Papers will find that the powers of the federal government were to be limited and defined, and of the state government unlimited and ill-defined. And that was the very essence of our society, was the federal system, and of course most power was at the state level. But, of course, it's very difficult to maintain an authoritarian society if you've got 50 individual states. So much better to have one centralized authority, and then, of course, everything can be controlled from there with a massive police force. Well, sort of like an Office of Homeland Security and the USA Patriot Act and other things justified because we're at war with terrorism. Anyway, if you're out there, if you have a question at all, comment for Monty. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Monty Benham, and of course his his address is 5312, the name of the street again?
Tucannon, T-U-C-A-N-N-O-N. It's an Indian
Tucannon,
name.
Tucannon, and that's Kennewick, Washington, 99336. It's the Friends of the Constitution, and I hope there are people out there who are friends of the Constitution who understand that, of course, it was written, it was a Christian document, it was written by Christians, and all the arguments that are given on the other side are simply basically efforts to confuse the issue because they don't want that very carefully concealed secret to be revealed. and that is that America was a Christian country. The Supreme Court repeatedly held this. Our state Supreme Courts held this. In fact, in most of our states initially, why you could not be elected to any office unless you, of course, acknowledged the divinity of Jesus Christ. That was the way it was in our states at the time of our Constitution. There was no wall of separation between church and state. That was simply erected as one of the means of undermining the fabric of our society and moving us towards this ever-increasingly all-power centralized authority. Well, Monty, of course, tomorrow night, if this fails tomorrow, then, of course, you're going to have to go ahead, or will there be another opportunity to get the legislation through before you have to go to the initiative process?
If the legislature drops the ball on it, I will take it as an initiative.
All right, fine.
And
it can't be introduced into the Senate, or
the Senate has introduced a companion bill to this. It's SB 5772, but I'm not sure it has not. It had a hearing, but to my knowledge, it hasn't been voted out of that committee. If it doesn't get voted out of the committee to go to the next level, it dies.
And how many people are on the committee? How many people will be there tomorrow night, do you anticipate?
We would love to. If there's anybody in the Olympia area that's listening, we would love to have them come to the John L. O'Brien Building, Hearing Room A, in the Capitol, for this committee meeting.
All right, fine. But how many people are there on the committee itself?
There are 11.
All right, fine, and so on.
There are 11, and it takes 6.
All right, now, do you have several people there that you can count on or not?
Well, I have sent out the word across the state. I've had people say, we're going to carpool down from Seattle. There's people in Olympia who say they'll be there, but, who knows? We just don't know until we show up.
No, but what I'm talking about as far as the legislators are concerned.
Well, there are two legislators that have agreed to testify. One is the sponsor of the bill, Representative Jerome Delvin, who is a Republican, and another one is Representative Dave Upthegrove, who is a Democrat.
Okay.
So we have bipartisan support for that. There will be 3 other people that will testify in favor of the bill also.
All right.
And people, by the way, can listen to this over the Internet. If they go to www.tvw.org, tvw.org, and then click on archives.
Now, is there anybody going to be actively opposing the bill?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And who's going to be actively opposing it?
The Superintendent of Public Instruction will oppose it, as well as the Washington Education Association.
Well, I think that
tells us. I know that because they opposed the Senate bill.
Well, I think it tells us a lot about why you have the problems you do in Oregon and how important, pardon me, in Washington, and how important this is to the other side that they would actively come out and oppose the bill. Anybody who would oppose teaching the truth about our Declaration of Independence and the truth about our Constitution and its Christian foundation certainly should not be teaching our children. And if you have your children in government schools, you better get them out, in my estimation. They don't stand a chance. And if you love them, you're going to get them out of those schools.
Well, the crux of their opposition will be this. We're already teaching it. Why do we need another mandate?
Well, of course, the answer to that is, how many of our children really understand that our freedoms come from God?
Yeah, and how many of our kids know what the 4th of July is celebrated for?
I bet they know all about Earth Day, Lenin's birthday.
Yeah.
They're taught all about Earth Day.
I went into my physical therapist today for some physical therapy, and there was a middle schooler in there, 7th grade. And so we just, ask her, why do we celebrate the 4th of July? She says, I don't know.
Right. Well, I think that's a pretty good commentary. And I would you be testifying?
Yes, I'll be testifying. I'm going to be the last one to testify. We'll have 2 teachers testify. One was a former representative in the legislature. And we had the 2 representatives to testify. I have a backup attorney I'd like to be able to have Jim Rigby, who is a Seattle attorney, testify. He's got a tremendous written testimony.
Okay, we've got Gloria calling from Spokane, and we're running out of time. Gloria, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I just want to ask Monty. Monty, I'm very much in favor of your bill, but unfortunately, if the charter bill passes, then all the laws are suspended except for health and safety if charter schools become commonplace in Washington State, and so your law would be null and void for charter schools unless the charter decided to accept it. And that's one really troubling issue about charter schools that will impact your bill.
All right. Have you thought of that one?
Well, you know, that's true. What she says is true, but what they're also trying to say, those people who are promoting charter schools, I'm not in favor of charter schools, by the way.
I'm not
but
either.
But those people who are promoting it are saying charter schools will only be like 1% of the, you know, of the school system. But the opponents of charter schools are saying the way the bill is written is that school districts can come in and opt to be charter schools and essentially take all local control away from, you know, from the people. And
well, have you read the bill? Because
I've read the analysis of it.
The charter school bill is a disaster in our state.
I know. I've read the bill.
And the Republicans, unfortunately, and I'm a strong conservative Christian Republican, are buying into it. And so I'm really fearful that because there's no oversight with the school board, the laws
right.
are suspended, and it's really dangerous. And by the way, all the schools could become charter schools within
right.
2 years.
You know, the way it's written, that's, you know, that's there's some real dangers, and it violates so many portions of the Washington State Constitution that it's, you know, it's laughable.
Oh, Gloria,
yeah.
We're going to have to let you go because we're out of time. You should have called in earlier.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Well, Monty, I want to thank you. Our guest has been Monty Benham, and, of course, she's out there on the front lines of this battle. I hope many of you will rally behind him. And remember to call 1-800-562-6000. And that's 1-800-562-6000 to let your legislature know how you feel. Do you have a parting thoughts for our listeners?
Just keep us in your prayers. There are a lot of good people. Just have faith. We will get it done one way or the other.
Well, God bless you for everything you're doing, Monty. Thank you so much for being
with
us. You bet.
Thank you for having me on.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I do hope that many of you out there will decide that you'd like to, of course, join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do now 5 hours a day. And if you believe that there's a problem and would like to become part of our team, again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, and you haven't had the newsletter before, give us a call and we'll be glad to send you one. My January newsletter deals with why we're going to war. The February newsletter deals with the fact that the war was planned long before the Bush administration even came to power. And the fact that most people don't understand the implications of that, the fact that this was really all laid out back in 1997, and you can go to a website entitled www.newamericansensory, that's newamericansensory.com. You need to go there, you need to get the information, and then, pardon me, newamericansensory.org. And that, of course, is the incredible thing about this. You need to understand that there have been people who have been planning on this war going back to June 3rd of 1997. www.newamericansensory.org. Get their information, understand who these people are the people, of course, who control our government today. But, of course, they'd made the decisions long before the Republicans won the presidential nomination. Could that be true? Well, that's covered and beginning to be covered in my February newsletter, if you'd like to get a copy. And then we ask you to pray for America, pray for our boys going to battle, and, of course, please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. We'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Lindsay Williams. And Lindsay, well, I've heard about Lindsay going back into the 1970s. He wrote a book on the energy crisis at that time, suggesting that when, of course, there were long lines before the gas stations, and, you know, of course, we knew there was a shortage of oil, and he wrote a book, The Energy Non-Crisis, saying that really, of course, everything that the American people were being told really wasn't true. And so I'm going to let Lindsay tell us a little bit about his experiences working there when they were building the Alaska pipeline and what the true story was, and of course how, of course, he came to realize that things are never as they appear to be, and he had a unique opportunity to deal with a lot of the men who really control our society behind the scenes, make mockery of this idea of representative government, and, of course, are manipulating the energy crisis for their own personal advantage. Lindsay, thank you so much for being with us.
Dr. Monteith, thank you so much for allowing me to be on your program tonight at such a critical time in America's history.
Well, why don't you just go ahead, you tell the story about what you know about energy, and then we'll get talking about the other things that are going on.
Well, it's interesting that all of my story relates to the providence of God. I was a missionary back in the state of Alaska in 1970, and it was that year that they announced they were going to build the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline, that 800-mile-long pipeline transversing the state of Alaska from north to south. And the first thing that came to my mind was 25,000 pipeliners to converge on the state of Alaska to build a pipeline. And I thought to myself, my, those men must need some spiritual guidance. After all, I had heard that pipeliners were supposed to be about the most wicked, cussing this, drinking this folks on the face of the earth. And believe you me, that was the understatement of the year when I actually got there and found out for myself. But I went to Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, which was a consortium of nine major oil companies that were going to build that pipeline. And I said, don't you need a chaplain on the pipeline? Well, their response was, we never had a chaplain on any pipeline in the world. What are we going to do with you? And I said, well, just allow me in the camps, and we'll find out. So sure enough, about 6 months later, after many, many callbacks, they said, all right, we'll give you the 7 work camps from Pearl Bay, which, of course, was on the Arctic Ocean, to Galbraith Lake, which was 7 work camps down the line towards the Brook Mountains. And you just go there, do anything you can, hold services, do anything you wish. Let's see what happens. Well, about 6 months later, R.H. King, who was a personnel relations man with Alyeska, came to me and he said, Lindsay, you are saving us thousands of dollars of counseling fees. We're not paying you anything. Your religious denomination is. And you're such a help to us. We would like to offer you executive status. And, well, I didn't know what that meant, but I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we'll give you a vehicle. You can go anywhere you'd like. We'll give you an executive pass. You just write your own airline tickets back and forth home. And we would like to invite you to sit in on our board meetings in an advisory capacity in order to help the relationship between management and labor. If I could have known at that point what I was going to get into, it changed my life. I will never again be the same person. If someone had asked me in 1974, Lindsay, do you believe that there is a group of people on the face of the earth who control the world? I would have laughed at them and said, who are you, a John Bircher? If someone had asked me in 1980, after the pipeline was all over and I had time to put all the pieces together in my mind, do you believe there's a group of people on the face of the earth who control nations, manipulate currencies, and people? I would have said, not only do I believe it, I sat and listened to them talk about it. I sat in their board meetings. I never snooped. I never looked for anything that they didn't allow me to see. I sat across the table from them and ate. I heard and helped to greet people who were probably some of the most controlling, manipulative people on the face of the earth. It was difficult to believe that there was any such people. I remember one night I went back to my dorm room, and after a meeting with these people all day long and sitting around with them in board meetings and so on, just in an advisory capacity, I was not management, and I looked up at the ceiling as I laid there in my bunk, and I said, oh, God, I can't believe that there are such people on the face of the earth. Nothing in government is ever done by chance. Nothing is happening in the Middle East tonight by chance. Nothing is happening in Korea, and my goodness, if there's ever been a critical time in this nation, it's what's happening right now between America and North Korea. And then we've got this Middle East thing going all at the same time, and we could be crippled. I happened to go by a fuel stop the other day, and diesel fuel was $1.89 a gallon. And I remember back in 1969, just before the long lines at the gas pump, I paid 25 cents a gallon for diesel fuel for a little vehicle I had back in those days. We are living in such a desperate time in this nation, and it doesn't have to be this way, because it's all done for the purpose of manipulation of the masses of humanity on the face of the earth.
And I think you're absolutely right, and it's about time the American people understood that everything is manipulation, and reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. And until you understand that we really do have unelected rulers, there really are people out there who, of course, working behind the scenes, financing communism, financing socialism, creating enemies, certainly working with the Central Intelligence Agency that kills people, that get in the way of the people of great power and great wealth. But behind this whole thing, I'm sure you recognize, Lindsay, are powerful spiritual forces as well. These men, even though they may think they're operating independently, many times are motivated by spiritual forces?
Yes, they definitely are. There are spiritual forces there. I think if we could look tonight into the spirit world, Dr. Monteith, we would see one of the darkest, blackest eras that the face of the earth has ever seen since Noah's flood itself. These great, powerful spiritual forces working through human beings, working through the New World Order, working through the forces that we're seeing work. It was so plain on the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline to watch these people. Their main motivation was not necessarily money. You know, the average person thinks that these people do what they do because of their bank account and because of dollars and cents. That's not it. They have all the money that they could ever possibly want. They could not write checks fast enough for the rest of their life to just sit down and sign them and get everything that they want. It's power, control, manipulation is the name of the game.
Amen to that. Well, let's talk a little bit about, of course, the energy non-crisis that you wrote about before. And, of course, we were told, oh, my goodness, you know, there's a shortage of oil, and we're just running out of oil, and we got just a little bit of oil up here. And, oh, yeah, there's oil, but there's certainly nothing at all like they have over in Saudi Arabia. And, of course, what the average person doesn't understand is when they actually put in the pipeline, they were going to put in two oil pipelines and a natural gas pipeline. Now, recently here, we're told that the price of natural gas has gone up some 39% because of it's wintertime, and oh my goodness, the price of oil is going up because we're so dependent upon the Arabs. The only trouble is Saddam Hussein's trying to ship out all the oil he can to make as much money as he can. Certainly there's no shortage of oil as far as Saddam is concerned, and of course, well, they're having a problem in Venezuela, but they're having a problem because the president of Venezuela has fired all the people who used to work there, who went out on strike, so of course the are not enough people to keep things going. But this is not why we're having the rising prices of oil today. You know, prices are going up because they're making a lot of profit on this, and they're manipulating this whole thing, and the American people are so gullible. They honestly believe, you know, there's a real shortage of oil throughout the world. That's why prices are going up.
There is no shortage of oil in America. There is as much crude oil on the north slope of Alaska, right here in our own country, as there is in Saudi Arabia. All of it is done for a purpose and for a reason. And I think it's probably best described by a man by the name of Senator Hugh Chance. He was the state senator in the state of Colorado at the time that I was on the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline, and he had been a friend of mine for some time. I invited him to come to the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline and see what I was seeing. He did. He came up and spent a week with me by permission from the oil company officials themselves. While he was there, naturally, being a senator in the state of Colorado, he was given a briefing by the top men of ARCO and BP. He met with them. He sat in their meetings. He was shown the mock-ups of the field, how much oil was there, how much they knew was there. And Senator Hugh Chance made the statement to me, which is in the forward, or is in the front cover of my book, Energy Non-Crisis. And he said to me, the last day he was there on the field, just before he left to catch the airplane to go back to Colorado, he said, Lindsay, I am amazed at what I've seen. He said, just before coming here to Alaska, I was sitting in the Senate of the state of Colorado when the men came from Washington, D.C. to brief me as a state senator as to the severity of the energy crisis. He said, Lindsay, I have come to realize from the facts and figures and mock-ups of the field and the people I've talked with here in Alaska on the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline that almost everything that I was told by those men from Washington, D.C. in that top-level briefing sitting in the Senate of the state of Colorado was exactly the opposite of what the truth is. He said, I was unintentionally misbriefed and misled in that briefing in the Senate of the state of Colorado. I was lied to. He said, we have no shortage. And it's written by Senator Hugh Chance right in the foreword to my book, The Energy Non-Crisis.
And, of course, the thing is, most of what you read in the newspaper today just is not true. Everything is manipulated. You remember when we knew that Osama bin Laden was the one who planned the attack on the World Trade Center, September 11th attack. We knew he was. In fact, that's why we went to war and killed all those people in Afghanistan. And now we find out it was Khaled Sheikh Mohammed that we just caught. He was the master planner behind what had happened. It was Khaled Sheikh Mohammed. Well, where was all the evidence that it was Osama bin Laden? Well, we never were allowed to see that because, of course, we didn't want Osama to know how we knew that he was behind what was going on. But, of course, you'll feel much better to know that Mr. Karzai, now the dictator of Afghanistan that we put in power, who used to work as a consultant for UNICAL, and UNICAL's pipeline is under construction at the present time. My understanding is they're building that pipeline now. Of course, that's what it was all about. And those of you who've read The Forbidden Truth and a fascinating book will find out that we planned this war, the Afghan war, several months before the 9/11 attack. How did we know there'd be an attack that would justify going to war? Well, you'll have to answer that question yourself, or maybe you read my newsletters, you'll understand a great deal more about it. Well, anyway, it's the same thing like deja vu all over again. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you found out? Isn't there basically, aren't they having to pump the natural gas back into the ground there rather than build a pipeline so there'd be plenty of natural gas? They're pumping it back into the subterranean areas to keep the price of natural gas up?
That is correct, Dr. Monteith. When the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline Corridor was built, there was quite a fiasco about how it was going to hurt the ecology. The pipeline corridor was cut and built to support three pipelines. One crude oil pipeline was built at the time, and the oil companies fully suspected the American government to allow them to build two more. One would be another crude oil pipeline, and one would be a natural gas pipeline. When the one pipeline was completed, the government said positively, no more, this is it, stop. Well, they had no choice. So as a result, the natural gas that just naturally comes up with the oil, I mean, this is, there's a cap on there, it takes place. Any person in the oil business knows that this is a phenomenon that's natural almost every oil field. And at Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, right now, tonight, because there is no pipeline in order to bring this natural gas to the lower 48 states. let me pause here just long enough before I give the figures to say that the cleanest method of producing electricity known to humanity, the most, the least damaging to the ecology of any method of producing electricity is natural gas. And every 24 hours at Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, there are 1 billion cubic feet of natural gas being pumped back into the ground because there's no place to put it. You can't burn it off. The government won't allow you to. There's no place to put it. This is an Arctic wilderness. There are no people there. There's nothing there. And they have no choice but to pump it back into the ground. In fact, there are 48 747-type jet engines. Now, if you've ever seen a picture of one of those engines, you know that a human being standing in the intake of that engine cannot even touch the bottom and the top at the same time. It's that large. And they have adapted those whereby they can pump this natural gas back into the ground, and there are 48 of them running right now at Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, pumping back 1 billion cubic feet of natural gas into the ground every 24 hours. And this figure comes from Mr. Jim Lawler, who was one of the executives with Atlantic Richfield, and I talked with him on the phone just the other day. This is an atrocity that should cause, just one thing alone, should cause the American people to rise up in arms and say, we have had enough. There's no revenue being gained from this natural gas. Nobody is getting the benefit of it. It's pumped back into the ground and cannot be used. Yet the price of our electric bill could be cut into half. The cleanest method of producing that electricity is not being allowed to come to the American people, and it's all done by a direct design. Now, some people would say, "What? Why? Why is all this taking place?" Let me make a statement. It may take a while for this to digest in the mind of the average listener because it'll be so new to you. Every time the price of a gallon of gasoline goes up at the pump, it is a method of worldwide taxation. Now, think about this for a moment. Where does that money go into the pocket of? Oh, you say it goes into the pocket of OPEC and the Arabs. No, it doesn't. Who controls the price of a gallon of gasoline at the gas pump and a barrel of crude? It's not controlled by the Arabs and OPEC. They used to think that it was controlled by them, but they found out that it's not. It's controlled by the men who sit at the computers in New York and London and tell the Arabs and other countries every day how much they're going to pay them for that oil. And if the World Bank needs a few more billion dollars, all they do is merely raise the price of a barrel of crude oil, raise the price of the gallon of gasoline at the gas pump, and that money is a direct method of worldwide taxation.
I mean, on the people who are getting the gas.
Needed by the power controllers.
Right, of course, and we pay that tax. And the American people don't understand that, you know, they're raising the price of natural gas here. In fact, you could even liquefy that natural gas and run your cars on it. A friend of mine actually developed a technique for doing that, but they don't want a solution to the problem. They want the problem. And, of course, as long as they've got the problem, they can come up with their solutions, which is to limit our freedom, to get us out of cars, to get us onto bicycles. Of course, they believe in a totally controlled and regulated society. The automobile is a symbol of freedom. That's, of course, why they hate SUVs, you know, of course, as if somehow individual freedom is the enemy. Well, it's the enemy if you want control. If you believe that everybody should be controlled by the all-powerful state, as they are in Russia and communist China, why, or at least as they were in Russia, and they still are more or less, because if you really think communism is dead over there, you really don't understand. The KGB is intact. The military is controlled by the communists. The Duma is controlled by the communists. Putin is a lifelong communist. But you got to sell this to the American people, and the American people are so gullible, they'll buy almost anything now. Mr. Lawler, and you are still on pretty good terms?
Yes. In fact, the Mr. X in my book, The Energy Non-Crisis, is really a combination of two people, Mr. Jim Lawler and Mr. Ken Fromm, both now are retired top executives with Atlantic Richfield back in those days. Both of them were men who had some moral about them. They seemed to care at least about people. Now, this was not the case with many of the oil company officials, but these two men did, and they helped produce much of the material for my book. After the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline was over, I felt a moral obligation to tell the American people the truth, the names, the dates, the places, the facts, the figures, And I had never written a book in my life. In fact, I never even took journalism in high school or college. But I sat down one day with a tape recorder, and an editor helped me, and we produced The Energy Non-Crisis. A few years after that, I looked back over my experiences and realized just what you have just said, Dr. Monteith, and that is that the American people are so gullible, they don't understand the mindset of the international power controllers. And I think that's the reason that we fall for their line so often, or many people fall for their line so often. And as a result, I wrote an entire book along this line. It's I had a congressman one day. He and I were lecturing together in Texas. He was a conservative. And he said to me off the platform one day, he said, "Lindsay, if you're crazy enough to put it into a book, I'll give you the material." And he sat down with the tape recorder in a few minutes, well, a few hours. He recorded much of my book, which I turned into a book, entitled Syndrome of Control. The reason for the book was to attempt to explain to the American people the mindset of these people, why they do what they do, and how we can combat them as individuals.
And, of course, that information, I'm sure, cost that congressman dearly. That was Congressman Hansen, wasn't it?
It eventually cost him his life.
Right. And they arrested him on trumped-up charges. They sent him to prison. He was tortured. If you've never heard any of my interviews with Congressman Hansen, you should have. And, of course, he's passed away, hasn't he, recently?
Yes, I think so.
Right. You have to understand, of course, this is what happens to a congressman who tries to tell the truth. Anyway, now you have, of course, 4 books, and you're giving those away if somebody will purchase one of your videos. We cannot put the price of the video out here, but you certainly can tell our listeners how to get your video, and you are offering those 4 books right along if they get the video, aren't you?
I have felt such an urgency recently because of the things that are taking place in the world, the way America's going. I just feel that time is critical. I feel that we may even be in the latter parts of biblical time. I've studied prophecy for many years, and naturally as a minister, the Word of God. And I felt such an urgency to try to get this material out. I've authored 6 books total. All of my books are full-length books. They're not pamphlets. They're 200 pages or more. And I have decided recently to give away my books. That's correct. Literally give them away. The reason being, I feel that if I can get this material out to people, it somehow can possibly change the minds of a few Americans to help them realize the facts and the truth. So as a result, I have produced numerous videotapes, which, of course, I do sell. And with any videotape, I give a set of all 4 of my books. That would be over $35 worth if you just went down to a bookstore and bought them. My videotapes have been produced likewise for the purpose of people that see something seem to remember it so much better. And the one videotape that is getting so much attention these days because of what's happening in the Middle East is one on vaccinations, what vaccinations cause, and the result of what it's doing to our children, and likewise to our adults. I have a number of doctors who helped me produce this. They actually gave testimonials of what's happening as a result of vaccinations, and it's a 45-minute video that I feel that every parent, every grandparent especially, that could help sway the mind of some parent. Dr. W.B. Clark of Indiana wrote, he said, "Cancer was practically unknown until compulsory vaccination with cowpox vaccine began to be introduced. I have had to deal with at least 200 cases of cancer, and I never saw a case of cancer in an unvaccinated person. That is startling." So I produced a videotape. We produced 4 of them. And any time a person gets one of my videotapes, I give them a set of all 4 of my books.
All right. Now, what's your telephone number so people can get in touch with you?
Just call, if you will, an 800 number. There'll be operators waiting to take your call even yet tonight. 800-321-2900. They'll take your credit card, be more than happy to work with. 800-321-2900.
All right, that's 800-321-2900. We'll get that out again. And if you're out there in the listening audience and would like to talk to Lindsay, a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464. 8295. And this is really such an important subject. Why don't we talk a little bit about your take on what's going on over there in the Middle East today? Now, well, we're told, of course, Saddam Hussein is a wicked man, and nobody will deny that. You know, he, of course, gassed his own people. But, you know, when he gassed his own people back in, you know, in the late 1980s, we didn't object to that. When he was gassing the Iranians during the Iraq-Iranian War, we gave him the chemical weapons to do it with. In fact, I've even talked to a man from Special Forces who was over there helping him gas the Iranians, and there was no outcry from our government. And now we say, gee, this wicked Saddam Hussein even gasses his own people. But it's amazing that there was no outcry when he was doing it using the poison gas and that we gave him, and of course we sold him the biological weapons. You know, where did he get the anthrax? We gave it to him. We've got Herman calling from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you for this topic tonight. Just two little anecdotes. In the 70s, about 73, I lived in Denver, and I, through my work, I met a security guard, and he had worked a number of months up in Wyoming guarding gasoline or oil tanks, and he said, told me they were filled to the brim, but they were not shipping oil out.
That was when we had the real shortage.
Right.
I mean, I can remember here in the, you know, in the area where I live, and there was all the talk about, you know, the gasoline tanks going to empty gasoline stations in the middle of the night and filling of the tanks there. They had to get rid of the gasoline. They didn't want to take it to the regular stations because there was supposed to be a shortage, so they were leaving it in these other stations. And so many of these stories came from so many different sources. I'm sure that they were true. It was all contrived, but you couldn't let the suckers know that because they were, of course, being drained when they went to the gas station. And, you know, you went every other day, depending upon your license number, and, oh, that was a shortage of gasoline. That's why the price was up so high.
Another question. Have you heard of Hayseed Stevens and his work to bring in an oil field at the south end of the Dead Sea, claiming it would be one of the largest in the world?
Lindy, have you heard about that?
Yes. In fact, I saw an article on it just the other day that was sent to me. It's fascinating what he's doing. And if this turns out to be what he feels the Lord has led him to do, this could be a major oil find and could affect the Middle East, definitely.
Okay, anything else, Herman?
Well, just as a ending comment, and if it were discovered in Israel, it would certainly make it all the more reason why in the future someone would want to attack the Holy Land.
Well, I just hope somebody doesn't attack the Holy Land here within the next few weeks. It's going to be very interesting. I know the administration is frightened to death that Israel would be attacked, and then, of course, that they will retaliate, and that, of course, will then tend to draw the Arab countries in if Israel retaliates against Saddam Hussein. So we're in for some very difficult times. I think everybody should pray that this thing is over as quickly as possible and that, of course, that Israel is not drawn into the fray. Thanks so very much, Herman.
Thank you.
God bless
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. Well, we're going to just have to take a break here in just a moment or two. We got about a minute before we go to the break. What are some of the other things you'd like to talk about, Lindsay?
Dr. Monteith, on page 26 in my book, The Energy Non-Crisis, there's a chapter entitled, Shut Down That Pipeline. What the caller just said is true. I was actually able to document a cross-country pipeline that was shut down in order to help create the energy crisis back in the early 70s.
And, of course, they always then slap the people on the wrist and say, gee, you shouldn't have done that. But that really isn't going to do much good. Of course, they've drained the money off. They may fine them $1 million or so to give you the idea that they're really out there looking after your best interest. Ladies and gentlemen, I hate to tell you this, but all these government bureaucrats, most of them, of course, when they quit their government jobs, will go to work for the oil companies or the drug companies. It doesn't matter what it is. Whatever field they're in regulating, they usually go to work for them after they get out of office. That's the way the game is played. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Lindsay Williams, and our telephone number is 888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there across America, well, I would love to hear from you again. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, we would hope that you would certainly help us get this information out across America. And I'll certainly take the opportunity to get those four books from Lindsay is a great one. And, again, the number to call is 1-800-562-6000. And, of course, I've got the books. They're fascinating. Every one of them has a different slant on what's going on today. And here's information that will help you to reach others and to understand that, as we've often said, reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. Well, let's go to Jeannie. Hi, Jeannie. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. It's so nice to hear Lindsay Williams' voice.
You've probably read his books before. Have you ever heard him before?
Well, never heard him before, but I was just looking at two of his books today that I was going through my library, To Seduce a Nation and the Non-Energy Crisis. And I thought, I was wondering where he was because we haven't heard from him. And so it's wonderful to hear him speak this evening.
Well, thank you so much for your comments. I appreciate that.
And basically one of our writers, one of our listeners, had written and said, you've got to get Lindsay on, and he gave me his telephone number. I didn't know how to get hold of him. I'd wanted to get hold of him for many years, and, of course, I called him. He was gracious enough to come on. So to share his wisdom with us, he sat down with these people. He realized that these evil men manipulate everything and make mockery out of this idea of democracy and representative government. Go ahead.
That video on vaccinations sounds very, very interesting. I'll send for that. But I wanted to mention this vaccination bill, Assembly Bill number 206. It just came up again, the Emergency Health Powers Act by our Assemblyman Richmond down in Granada Hills. So now that's rearing its ugly head again on this Emergency Health Powers Act.
And, of course, this is happening all across the country. Certainly a woman who's a state legislator in another state had called me just the middle of last week, frantically wanted to get copies of our June and July newsletters last year dealing with vaccination because they were trying to push through these compulsory vaccination legislations in her state. And people have to understand these are coordinated all across the country by these people, of course, who want to force us to have our children vaccinated. And in this state, it was about chickenpox, which is a stupid vaccine. Well, of course, unless you manufacture the vaccine, that is very profitable. But chickenpox is a mild disease, produces very, very few problems. You're far better off to have it as a child and get rid of it rather than, of course, to get the vaccine, because that makes you much more susceptible, in my opinion, to getting herpes zoster later on, because that's the same virus, and it simply gets in your system and is there forever. And vaccination does not produce the same immunity that you get through the normal means, and that is getting infected. Certain diseases are very dangerous. This one is a sort of a non-disease. I mean, yeah, you're sick for a little while and you got the chicken pox, but, I mean, nobody ever died of chicken pox, at least very, 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 very rare, certainly today.
That's right. I had it when I was a child. So I wanted to mention to Lindsay, because he wrote that book, The Non-Energy Crisis, I came to understand that we were being manipulated, and I wanted to thank him this evening.
Thank you. I definitely accept that and appreciate your interest so much. It's amazing how that book went around the world in a short period of time.
How many copies of that went out?
Oh, my goodness, I don't know. It was on the bestseller list for a period of time, so we had, that meant at that point, which was just in the inception of the book, we had over 100,000 copies out. I really don't know, but there have been so many. And it went around the world in a short period of time. You know, I was a missionary in the state of Alaska. I was an unknown. Nobody even knew I was there. I was back out in the bush country as a bush country pilot and a missionary supplier to other missionaries as well as my own work. And here I was sitting there as a total nobody, totally unknown, and all of a sudden from everywhere, speaking engagements started coming everywhere from Australia to New Zealand to across America, and just overnight, that thing just went wild and went all across the country. And it was very pleasing to see that somehow we could get the truth out and let people know just what was taking place. You know, I do think, though, this business of vaccinations, because of what's happening in the Middle East and all of our service personnel are being vaccinated as they've been sent over there, it's such a startling turn of events. Dr. Dennis Turnbull had studied cancer for 30 years, and he made this statement: I have no hesitation in stating that, in my judgment, the most frequent disposing condition of cancerous development is infused into the blood by vaccination and revaccination. And then Stan Malmstrom, who wrote a book just recently, stated a prime example of vaccinations, the DPT shot, that seems to be the primary cause of crib death, spinal meningitis, brain damage, plus other problems in infants. Parents, please learn the facts.
And, of course, there was a lot of autism that was associated with that original DPT, and they lied for years. They said it's nothing to worry about, absolutely nothing to worry about, and then they came up with a new vaccine. Now, they were either lying before or they're lying now. They knew it was a problem. They had a very, very safe pertussis vaccine, a whooping cough vaccine over in Japan, and they wouldn't allow that to be used for almost 20 years, knowing full well that children were dying and getting permanent brain damage. And they lied to the American people, saying there's absolutely no evidence of problems with this, and they knew there were. And that's the trouble with the vaccines, is that the people in charge have consistently deceived the American people. And what's even more amazing is the American people still don't know they are being lied to by their leaders and by people within the CCC and within the NIH. And that, the way they covered up the fact that they gave us a cancer virus in the original Sabin vaccine, and they knew it was there, and even when there was no question at all it was a cancer vaccine, why, they used up the rest of the vaccine, millions of doses, on the American people. And now people are coming down with mesotheliomas and other tumors that are directly related to SV40, and they examine these tumors, and they got the cancer virus in them. And they say, oh, well, it's just because the cancer virus is there. And, of course, they get that sort of virus, that sort of a tumor in animals and hamsters when they take the virus. Well, that doesn't mean necessarily that the virus produced the cancer, and they know it does. But they can't let the American people know about. Think of the liability, why the American people might even lose confidence in vaccines if they learn the truth. Go ahead, Jimmy.
For years to come, American service personnel will suffer because of what's being given them right now as they go over to the Middle East and are given these vaccinations. So we're facing a number of things. We're facing the vaccination problem. And, oh, my goodness, that alone frightens me in relation to the Middle East. Secondly, the Nimitz left your beautiful state of California today, left San Diego, with 5,000 service personnel aboard. At the same time, North Korea, attached to one of our reconnaissance aircraft, a number of their aircraft actually sighted in on it, did not pull the trigger. We are sitting here as sitting ducks. Most of our service personnel are over there. We have practically no protection left in this country. We are in jeopardy at the gas pump. The truckers don't know how they're going to do a thing but turn their trucks back into the mortgage company because they don't know what to do, yet we have plenty of gasoline in the North Slope of Alaska. These are such major critical issues that never in my lifetime, and I don't think probably in yours, Dr. Monteith, has anyone ever faced before. Let me just try to explain. I'd like to give you a copy of my book, The Energy Non-Crisis, as a gift. I would like to give you a copy of my book, To Seduce a Nation, my third book, Syndrome of Control, and my latest book, which is a full-size, library-size book, 263 pages, on alternative health as to what you can do to build up that immune system in order to overcome all of these things, even the result of the vaccinations if you took them years ago. At least now you can learn the facts as to what to do to build up that immune system. And this latest book is entitled, You Can Live. And with any one of my four videotapes, that's the one on vaccinations, another one entitled Deadly New Diseases, another video entitled Energy Non-Crisis, and then on one on what's happening to the family farmer. With any one of these videotapes, I would like to give you an entire set of all four of my books that you can give to your friends and neighbors and help them know the solution to the problems that we're facing today.
All right, fine. Anything else you'd like to say, Jeannie?
No, I think this show should be one of the tapes of the month, though, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine.
And thanks for finding,
God bless.
Lindsay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right, fine. Well, that's Jeannie calling from Aptos. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment for us, why, we would certainly love to hear from you. And, of course, our guest is Lindsay Williams, who is best known for his book, The Energy Non-Crisis. Now, tell us your take on what's going on. You comment that certainly the Nimitz is going over, that we're stripping our country of our people. You know, they're even beginning back in Washington, D.C. to talk about starting the draft again. I wonder how many people are so anxious to go to war, really want to have their sons or grandsons drafted to go off and fight in these stupid wars. As far as the shots that they're giving, I talked to Ken Alabak. He was the number two man in the Soviet Biological Warfare Unit. He said, you know, you give all these people vaccines, you know, and they get so allergic. He said, I've taken vaccines, full courses of vaccines for 56 different diseases. The ones we were working on, he said, I'm allergic to everything. And I know that happened to my son in the military. You know, he was perfectly healthy when he went in. All these vaccines, he became terribly allergic to everything. He almost died of acute respiratory arrest because of a asthma type of condition he developed in the military. And I'm firmly convinced it's related to all these vaccines. And this is happening to so many of your young men. And yet, of course, they keep denying it. The VA denies it. You go up there and you'll find out there's lines of young people up there trying to get help and for their multiple allergies they got as a direct result of their vaccines. And, of course, everything is done to cover that up. The incidence of autoimmune disease, of certainly asthma, and all these types of diseases in our youth is increasing dramatically, as well as autism, as well as juvenile diabetes, which, of course, I believe in many instances related to autoimmune disease because of the vaccines. But, of course, the people on the other side say, oh, well, you know, there's no evidence of that, but they have no studies to show that they're safe. They give a vaccine, they study the people for 2 weeks afterwards, and then, of course, based upon those studies, they give it to our kids, and then, as they did with the rotavirus, they start dying, and really hundreds of them get into susception as a result of it. And then after releasing it and giving it to all of our children, they withdraw it, and they give us the hepatitis B vaccine because we give it in the nursery if we have to have that, not that there's any danger to the children. That's the most toxic of all the vaccines we've ever had. But, of course, it's very, very profitable for the drug companies, and the people at the CDC and the NIH go along with it. And then somebody points out it's got mercury in it, and, of course, it's poisoning the brains of our children way above the EPA standards. And they say, oh, well, we'll stop giving it. Well, why didn't they think of that before they gave it to millions of our children and damaged their brains? These are the questions that nobody ever wants to ask. So go ahead, Lindsay. Of course, I know you're very concerned about these vaccines as well.
Very concerned about the vaccines, and I'm extremely concerned that the American people realize just what jeopardy we're putting ourselves in. I wonder if the average American realizes that within a matter of days that our entire country could be crippled if the rest of the Arab world decided that they were going to place a stop on the oil that we received in this country. Do you realize that the trucker who brings in your hardware or your groceries or the products that you have in your home, all of these are dependent on crude oil? Give you just an example that was brought this so home to me back in the days when I was on the, just after I was on the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. You may remember that crude oil went to $32 a barrel. They thought back in those days that was high. And this past week it hit the highest that it ever hit in the history of the world. But back in those days it was $32 a barrel. That was an exorbitant price and raised the price of gasoline from 25 and 35 cents a gallon to $1.50 a gallon just overnight. And the Arabs were just bringing in the gold and the silver and the dollars. And back in those days, the powers that be who had gone over there found their oil, developed those oil fields, and then advised the Arabs, told them, says, oh, buy gold, buy gold, buy gold. You may remember back in those days that they took the price of gold to $700-$800 an ounce. At the same time, they took the price of crude oil to $32 a barrel, and they told the Arabs, oh, buy up all the gold you can. Oh, it's just the most valuable thing in the world. Well, it was after the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline had been completed, and I received a call one day from Mr. Ken Fromm. And I said, my goodness, Ken, it's been a while since I've talked to you, and we chatted for a few moments. And he said, well, Lindsay, are you going on and speaking to us? I said, yes. In fact, I'm starting one in Washington State, working my way over the next 2 months through Southern California. And he said, well, every place you go, tell people that the price of a barrel of crude oil is going to go to $11 a barrel. I laughed at him on the phone. I said, Ken, you can't do that. From $32 a barrel to $11 a barrel, I said, it would break the Arab economies. These sheikhs and sheikhs can't stand that. And he said, yes, it's going to. Well, I decided I would take his word for it because I knew he knew what he was talking about. In fact, I asked him the question. I said, how can this be? He said, Lindsay, you know that everything like that takes place by design plan. And he said, we've planned it. We know exactly what's going to happen. Well, it did. It went to $11 a barrel. And people in my audience just literally laughed at me. They would break out laughing sometimes. It went to $11 a barrel, and the price of gold went down from $800 an ounce to somewhere in the neighborhood of $300 and $400 an ounce. And the Arabs, in order to maintain the economy that they had created for their subjects, the Arab sheikhs and sheikhs had no choice but to sell their gold. Well, what did they do with it? They had to sell it back to the identical same people that they had bought it from for $800 an ounce. They now had to sell it back for $400 and $500 an ounce. And it was all done by a design plan that had been manipulated from the beginning intentionally for the purpose of doing just exactly what they did, and it was all known by certain top oil company officials, as one told it to me. Well, after it was all over with, my phone almost rang off the hook. They said, you're a prophet. I said, no, I'm not a prophet. I just happened to know the man who helped to do it. And it's so amazing how everything that's taking place right now is done by a plan that was probably designed a long time ago.
And, of course, the thing is that they've given us the most affluent society in all time, and we're just so used to it, we're so happy. And but, of course, I believe that that affluence is about to disappear. And, of course, the American people do anything to get the good times rolling, even give up their freedom. And I believe that's going to happen, but that's not going to restore the good times that we've had. And just as it was when the Arabs were flush with the oil, all that oil money and living so well. But, of course, I believe that the American people are going to look back to what we've had in this last few years as the good old times. It was all, of course, created. It was all an artificial bubble. There was never any money there at all. It was simply created on paper. But, of course, a lot of people felt they had great wealth, and we were living it up. But, of course, those days, I believe, are gone. I believe America's greatness is gone because America's turned its back on God. We've got Mike on the line. Hi, Mike. Question or comment? Mike? Mike, are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I'm not Mike.
Oh, you're not Mike. Who is
this? This is Jerry from L.A.
Oh, hi, Jerry from L.A.
Hi. You know, I feel, you know, kind of like, you know, I guess I called yesterday, I'm not sure, and, you know, I kind of feel, you know, with this news of this captured Al-Qaeda planner, Khalid Mohammed, you know, I find it very difficult to believe that the CIA didn't see the value of delaying the announcement a couple of weeks. So, you know, any information they could have gathered from his arrest, you know, could have been used, you know, to capture some more people. Now, by announcing it immediately, you know, all that information is useless.
Well, I think most of what this goes on, Jerry, is completely contrived. It's like the John Reed, the mad, the shoe bomber, you know, who's trying to light the fuse, you know, to set off the bombs in his shoes. Of course, he doesn't know that you can't set that off with a fuse. You have to have a blasting cap. The whole thing was contrived for the better for the American people, and this announcement was contrived as well. Anything else you'd like to say?
No, but I just, if we're not going to fight this war, if we're going to fight another Vietnam War, we're not going to allow our soldiers to win. No. I don't want to be part of the war.
I think we're going to win the war. I think we're just going to leave our soldiers over there indefinitely. In other words, the plan is to station at least 100,000 or more soldiers in the Middle East and to have our soldiers stationed all throughout the world. That is the plan of the people in charge. Now, whether it's going to happen, I don't know, but that's the plan anyway.
Well, I meant the war on terrorism.
Right. Oh, well, we're not fighting the war on terrorism.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm not, you know, if we're not going to fight the war on terrorism, what are we doing in Iraq and, you know, what are we doing, you know... It's ridiculous.
Well, it is ridiculous. Thanks. Anything else, Jerry?
No, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's go to Nathan. Hi, Nathan. How are you?
Hi. Well, good evening, gentlemen. You know, I'd say in general I agree with both of you, but I do have a question, and it's a pretty profound one, and I hope you'll hear me out. You know, in 1975, I believe it was, Indonesia invaded East Timor, and the world basically said and did nothing, and the tyranny of Indonesia wiped out a predominantly Christian nation, and basically there was no protest. It was more or less acquiesced to by the major capitals of the world. My biggest concern about the Middle East is, would God forbid Israel find itself in an analogous situation? God forbid, you know, that don't intervene, and I can understand that, and I can definitely understand the skepticism about our government and a lot of its actions, but basically does acquiescing in this case essentially mean, as they will argue, okay, and I'm just presenting it for the sake of argument, mean acquiescing to them, to their basically terroristic, what seems to me to be a terroristic mode of civilization. Okay. Not Al-Qaeda, not Saddam Hussein, but an entire mindset that, you know, I don't think that war of to remove Saddam Hussein is going to change. Okay, I will agree with you, but it seems to me that acquiescing to them, I don't know. I'm a little confused.
Now, what is your point? That we should not.
It's
be
not
going
a point.
To
it's
war,
a question.
We should be going to war. Or?
Well, no. It's not my position that we should be going to war. But my question is more along the lines of what do we do to remove the very real threat of terrorism that not only threatens the, which you could say the New World Order, but probably the rest of us along with it. Right. Constitutional government, too, of everything, civilization.
All right, fine. So what do we do, Lindsay, what would your response be to Nathan? What do we do about terrorism that threatens the New World Order and threatens civilization as we know it?
Well, not that I'm for the New World Order. I'm just saying I know why they would want to get rid of it, because it's a threat to their hegemony, but it also seems to me to be a threat to life itself. I'm just confused.
All right, fine.
I don't know what to do myself.
Lindsay, how would you answer Nathan? Because that's a very provocative question, and I wish you'd called in earlier. You know, my answer would take at least 10 minutes, but what would your response to him be?
Dr. Monteith, there positively is something we can do about it, and I definitely would not like to close out this program today with people feeling a hopeless situation is here. The answer is know the issues, and we as individuals can do something. You know, Dr. Monteith, you as a talk show host and talk show hosts like you are doing the greatest job of informing the American public of any people that are out there. In order for the liberal media to stay free, they have to allow us to stay free also. Me as an author, you as a talk show host, and this individual that just called in and others like him, you can learn the facts. You can listen to a program like this. You can know the issues. You can get books like mine and the videotapes. Learn the facts. Then we as individuals can take action and do something about it. There is an answer to vaccination. You can build up your immune system. You find the answer in my book, You Can Live. There is something that we can do about the mindset of the average American individual in combating these people, even at the gas pump or at the grocery store. You'll find it by learning their mindset in my book, Syndrome of Control, listening to talk show hosts like you, and there is an answer. So take hope. I think there's still something that the average individual can do about it.
Very well
said. I agree.
So,
thank you.
Okay, Nathan, let me give you my answer. First of all, you have to understand where this Islamic terrorist movement came from. It came from Saudi Arabia,
yes.
The Wahhabi movement.
Yes.
Of course, we have an excellent book called Hatred's Kingdom, written by Dor Gold. It goes into the background. Not only did Saudi Arabia finance this whole movement before 9/11, it continued financing it, and of course the Hamas afterwards. Hamas is doing everything they can to stop the peace process. But of course, why do we suppress this information here in the United States? Because the American government is working full-time with the Saudis, creating the best enemies that money can buy. Yes, it's an idea, but of course, if the Arab people could understand that they're being used and manipulated, and of course this movement that they many of them are embracing was created by Brzezinski when we created the Afghan War, and was created when Brzezinski brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power back in 1979 when we toppled the Shah, and of course they're being used. I think that a lot of them probably would begin to reevaluate. And of course, I will tell you the best thing that we could do would be to spread the gospel there. Because of course, once these people learn the truth, they would no longer be, Islamic fundamentalists.
But do you think that some of them may even know that, to be so filled with hatred that, that they don't care, that they're still willing to give their lives for?
Well, I think that as long as they embrace this radical form of Islam, they will. What we need to do is come up with a better idea, because it's a battle of ideas, and behind that are the spiritual forces which energize this totally evil religion, which is not the Muslim religion, but is Wahhabism, and is the Islamic movement. That's our enemy, not Muslims, but the Islamic movement that added an additional tenet to the five tenets of Muhammad, and that sixth tenet was jihad. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
Good answer. Thank
good
you.
Night. God bless. And Lindsay, we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Yes, I would say again, as I tried to state a moment ago, try our best to learn the issues. And Dr. Stan, I would like to say to you personally, I know that we've done three shows together now, I just want to congratulate you on the marvelous job that you're doing in informing the public, and you're so well informed yourself as an individual. Congratulations. God bless you. Keep up the great work. And again, thank you so much for allowing me to tell the people that there is hope out there.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting on some of our other shows. We've still got some shows we haven't had you on yet, but good night and God bless you too, Lindsay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. That was Lindsay Williams. I hope you have enjoyed the program. And again, his telephone number is 1-800-562-6000. That's 1-800-562-6000. He's dedicated to certainly getting the truth out, and I applaud him for his message. And I've seen the video. It's very impressive. I've read the books, or several of them. I think you'll find them fascinating. So this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time, of course, when, of course, we want to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're really dependent upon the people in the listening audience who listen to our message and believe in what we're doing. And we hope that many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Tell others about our programs. Tell them about our website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And please go there. You can pull down our programs, you can pull down our newsletters, and certainly copy them, get the information out. And then pray for America. Pray for the boys who are going to be going into battle in the near future. Pray for the citizens of Israel, and pray for the Arabs, too. Pray for the Arab citizens. They're talking about 600,000 of them becoming refugees and fleeing for their lives. And of course, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
let's go upstairs and get those things you want me to copy for you. I don't know where they are.